Bhavataya Pradibodhitam Bhagavata Narayanena Swayam Vyasena Kratitam Purana Munina Madhye Mahabharatam Advaitamrita Varshinim Bhagavatim Ashtadashadhyayinim Ambatvamanusantadhami Bhagavad Gita Bhavadveshini.
Can you hand me that shawl? It's a relay.
Okay.
Would someone like this?
Yeah, you want one of these papers? Did you want one too?
Sure.
Yeah, let me take one.
No more
runs. Yeah, I know. You take that one. We're on now.
Because you're
here. She has a book. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you can sit there if you want. And you can share a little bit. Yeah. What's your name again?
Michael.
Okay, so we left off in verse 9 of chapter 11. So just to remind you, we haven't done the Gita for a while, so we're just starting back after a month or more, right? A month or more. But, yeah, so it's been a while. So, chapter 11 is the chapter where Arjuna asks Krishna, that he says, if you think that I can, that I'm able to see this, could you please give me the vision of your whole Swarupa, the Ishwara Swarupa? If you think I can, basically, if you think I'm able to see it, if I can handle that, and if it's all right with you, would you give me the vision of your, of the Ishwara Swarupa? And before that he said, you know, you've unfolded all of this to me, and I have followed it clearly, and I have Shraddha also, that you are, in terms of the Ishwara Swarupa, the cosmic form of Bhagavan, that I understand that, and I accept that as being true. I don't have any doubt. It's just that I would like to see it with my own eyes. And then the Krishna says, he agrees, and he says, I'll show you, and I'll show you this, and I'll show you that. He says, but in order to see it, you need to have a divya chakshu. You need to have a celestial sight. You can't see this with your own eyes. And so I'll give you that celestial vision, that celestial sight. And so then, saying that, we're going to do verse 9 now, since even though we've done it before, because after, once, Krishna said, what he said in verse 8, he said, Natu mam shakyase drashtu manena eva sochakshusha. He says, literally, you're not able to see me with your own physical eyes. Then he says, divyam didami te chakshuhu. I will give to you these celestial eyes and see. Then he says, see my yogeshwaram. See my yoga. See this incredible capacity. That I have the capacity of Ishwara, the yoga of Ishwara. And then, now, having said that, now Krishna starts to show Arjuna the whole Vishwasarupa, the whole form, his form, as Ishwara, as Virat. Virat means the whole physical form and the form of this universe. And so now this is starting to take place, and Sanjaya comes in. Sanjaya is the one who is reciting the whole Bhagavad Gita to Dhritarashtra, the blind king. Right? And so the Dhritarashtra, Sanjaya had also been given this Divya Chakshu to really witness from a distance the whole Mahabharata war, actually. and he had focused in on this conversation, the Bhagavad Gita, between Krishna and Arjuna, and he's relating to Dhritarashtra everything that is being said. So within, Sanjaya is kind of the overarching narrator of the whole Bhagavad Gita, and within it, it'll say something like Krishna uvacha, then Krishna said, then Arjuna said, then Krishna said, then Arjuna said. But that's all Sanjaya telling Dhritarashtra, the blind king, the father of all of the Duryodhana, and all of the kind of the Asuric side. There's the Pandavas, and then there's Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana and the Kauravas. So he's the father of the Kauravas. So anyway, so now, very, very seldom does Sanjaya come in himself as the narrator, because usually Krishna is talking or Arjuna is talking, but now Sanjaya is coming in, because Arjuna is too overwhelmed to talk. And Krishna is involved trying the whole vision. So here, so repeat after me for this first line. Om Sanjaya Uvacha, Sanjaya Uvacha, Evam Uktva Tato Rajan, Evam Uktva Tato Rajan, Mahayogeshwaro Harihi,
Mahayogeshwaro Harihi,
Darshayama Saparthaya,
Darshayama Saparthaya,
Paramam Rupam Aishwaram, Paramam Rupam Aishwaram. So he says, then, O King.
Sunday?
Oh. Yeah, I'll do Sunday this time, but I think when I start going through this, you'll see may not do Sunday every time.
Oh, okay.
But this one I will.
Okay.
Evam uktva tetaha rajan mahayoga ishwaraha, so mahayogeshwaraha harihi, darshayamasa parthaya paramam rupam aishwaram. So he says, then, O King, talking to Dhritarashtra, the father of the Kauravas and Duryodhana, then, O King, he says, Hari is a name for Krishna. It means the one by whose grace all of the papas are eliminated, the one who destroys all the papas for the bhaktas. It's Harihi. So Harihi, nominative singular, who is the Mahayogeshwara, the one who is capable of this whole, of manifesting this whole Ishvara Swarupa for Arjuna, that Mahayogi, there's no greater yogi. So Ishvara is the greatest of all yogis, because he is the one that has the Mahasiddhi, means the one from whom the whole manifest creation can come into the manifestation. So he says that the Ishvara of this great yoga that allows the Maya, that allows this creation to come into manifestation. So that Hari, the one who through grace removes all of the, through Jnanam actually, but through whose blessing, through that Ishvara Nugraha, removes all of the papas for the bhakta. So, O King, this Hari, having told Arjuna in this manner, he darshayamasa parthaya, he showed to Partha. Partha is another name for Arjuna, son of Prithu. So darshayamasa parthaya, he showed to Partha paramam rupam aishwaram, this supreme. Paramam means this limitless rupa, the limitless form of Ishwara. Aishwarya means that limitless form that belongs to Ishwara. So then, having shown to Arjuna, now he makes, darshayamasa means he actually makes him see. So he shows it to him. So he shows this infinite form, this paramarupam, to Arjuna. And then, this is now, we can take it, this is what he shows him from these verses on, this is what Krishna, the Lord, shows to Arjuna. Or you can take it either way from the Bhasha. Or you can take it as this is what Arjuna sees. So having, see, Krishna is showing him. So as he's showing him, this is what Arjuna is experiencing. And of course, Sanjaya is experiencing the same thing, because Sanjaya also has this Divya Chakshu. this divine eye to be able to see this whole thing. And he's reporting it to Dhritarashtra. So repeat after me. Anekavatra Nayanam.
Anekavatra Nayanam.
Anekadbhuta Darshanam.
Anekadbhuta Darshanam.
Anekadivya Bharanam.
Anekadivya Bharanam.
Divyaneko Jitayudham.
Divyaneko Jitayudham.
He says, This is what Arjuna sees. The first thing he sees is Aneka Vaktra Nayanam. This is a Bahubali compound. He sees one in whom there are Aneka, countless mouths and eyes. So just imagine, Arjuna is being shown this Vishwasarupa, this infinite form. And the first thing he sees are Aneka means many. Many, Vaktra means mouth, and Nayana means eyes. The one in whom there are many, many, countless mouths and eyes. And then he says, and then there are Aneka Adbhuta Darshanam. There are, Darshanam here means the things which are revealed, things. Darshanams are the things that are being seen. The many, he says, Aneka Adbhutam. Many things which are Adbhuta. Adbhuta means they've never been seen before. They're amazing. They're wondrous. Unimaginable, you know. So he's seen, first he sees all these mouths and all of these eyes, and then he's seen things that are absolutely astounding, wondrous, Adbhutam. And then he says, Aneka Divya Abharanam. And then he's seen on this divine Swarupa. Swarupa means this infinite form. He's seen all of these divya, celestial, we use for divya, all of these celestial ornaments, like bangles and rings and necklaces and malas and crowns and earrings. It's all decked. This infinite form is decked with ornaments, aneka, with celestial ornaments. And then he says, and then it's also divya aneka udita ayudam. This form also is one in which there are ayudas. Ayudas means weapons. So he says, divya aneka, celestial, they're aneka. There's countless celestial weapons that are raised, ready to strike. Right? So you have to try to imagine all of this all at the same time. So also, along with these, the eyes, the many mouths and many eyes and many wondrous things, there are also all kinds of ornaments, you know, golden ornaments and celestial weapons that are ready to strike. Vidyaka means they're raised, like if you were to have a sword that was raised or a bow that's pulled, ready to be released. So countless weapons, okay? Let's go, next one.
Divya
Malyambarataram, Divya
Malyambarataram,
Divya Gandhanulepanam,
Divya Gandhanulepanam,
Sarvascharyamayam Devam,
Sarvascharyamayam Devam,
Anantam Vishwato Mukham,
Anantam Vishwato Mukham.
Then he saw Divya Malyambarataram. He saw that form was wearing many divya malas, many malas, all made of celestial flowers, divya malas and umbara and celestial clothes. It was all clothed with malas and clothing. Umbara are the clothes, the things that are being worn. And then he says, Divya Ganda Anulepanam. And also, that form was decked, was anointed with sandalwood. Kanda here just means sandalwood. It was anointed with sandalwood, with celestial sandalwood and scents. Then Sarvashriyam, then Sarvascharyam. This form, he says, the entire sarva, the entire form was ascharya. We say ascharya. Ascharya is like Adbhutam. It's something unimaginable. It's a wonder. You know, like when they say the seven wonders of the world, it's a Ascharya. It's Ascharyavat. What a wonder, what a wonder, what a wonder. Sarvam, he says, Sarvam means the entire Swarupa, the entire form was Ascharya. It was, he says, Ayam Ascharya. This entire form was Ascharya. And it was Devam. It was luminous. I'll talk about that a little bit later. He says, it was luminous Devam, and it was Anantam. Means wherever he, it's without end. The form that he was seeing, he's just picking out all of these things that he's seeing, but there's no end to the form. It's like wherever you look, that form is still there. It's Anantam. And it's Vishwato Mukham. Means it's multi-directional in whatever direction that he's looking. So if he's looking here, there's the form. If he's looking up here, there it is. If he's looking behind him, there it is. It's penetrating from, it's coming from all sides. It's Vishwato Mukham. It's multi-faced, right? So, and it's limitless. So then he says, Divi Surya Sahasrasya Bhavet Yugapat Uttita Bhavet Yugapat Uttita Yadi Bhasadrshi Sasyat Yadi Bhasadrshi Sasyat Vasastasya Mahatmanah Vasastasya Mahatmanah. He goes, he says, if in the sky, Divi means in the sky, Surya Sahasrasya Bhavet Yugapat Uttita, if in the sky there was rising up, right, there was rising up simultaneously, there was the rise simultaneously, the simultaneous rising up of 1,000 suns. Surya means sun. Surya Sahasrasya of 1,000 suns. So here he says, if you go to the next line, Yadi Baha, he said, if the light of 1,000 suns was to rise up, manifest, Uttita, it was to manifest Yugapat simultaneously. So if that were to happen, then he says, Sadrashi, just like that, if you can imagine what that might be like, 1,000 suns, riding the light of 1,000 suns, manifesting at exactly the same time. He says, that, he said, sa basaha, sa syat basaha, tasya mahatmanaha. That was the light of this mahatma, of Ishwara. That was the light of this great being. It was like a light unimaginable. And the Bhasha Shankara says, you can't imagine what 1,000 suns might look like. But that's exactly the idea. There's something unimaginable. And sahasra, sahasra means countless. Say there was countless suns rising all at the same time, manifesting at exactly the same time. How bright that light might be. That, it's unimaginable. Like this, the light, the shining of Bhagawan, of this great Mahatma, right? Using, calling Bhagawan a Mahatma, of this great soul, this Basaha, of that great Mahatma, Ishwara, it was likened to that, he says. And then he says, Tatraikastanjagat kritsnam, pravibhaktamanekada, apashyat deva devasya, sharire pandavastada. He says, then, apashyat pandavaha tada, then pandava, another name for Arjuna, then Arjuna apashyat, then he saw deva devasya sharire, in the body of the god of gods, deva devasya, in the body of the god of gods, because Bhagavan Ishwara, in fact, every devata is just a manifestation of Ishwara. For every law in the creation, there's a devata. But each devata, so it's just talking about the consciousness, Right? Every law itself is a conscious aspect of the creation, and so is represented by a devata. But every devata is an organ of Ishwara. So the one who is the deva of the devata. So he says, then Bhagavan saw in the sharira of the Lord of Lords, of the Lord of all of the devatas, tatra ekastam jagat kritsnam. Jagat kritsnam. He says, the entire jagat, the entire universe, ekastam, abiding as one whole. Really, ekastam means it's abiding in one place. But one place isn't exactly the meaning, because there is no place without the universe. So, you see what I mean? In the universe itself comes space, air, fire, water, earth. And so there's no place for the universe to abide. So, other than as having the substratum of the conscious being that you are, as consciousness. And so what they mean there, from the Bhasha and from Swamiji, is this ekastam, is that what he sees is this whole universe as one entity. Everything, that entire jagat is ekastam. It's just in one place. It's one whole. And within that one whole, pravibhaktam anekada, there are all of the countless anekada. There are countless individual things. Like if you were to look at this and see this whole room, then you were to say, this whole room is just one entity. This entire room is ekastha. It's just one entity. But this one entity that we're calling room is made of pravibhaktam. Pravibhaktam means all of these individual things are part and parcel of this one whole room. So now think of it as one whole, ekastam, abiding in one place as one thing, as one rupam, as one form. This whole infinite form is itself made up of all of these countless, infinite, unique forms. So all of these unique forms are existing within this one form. That's what he means by pravibhaktam anekada. So this entire creation existing as one form is included in which are all of these individual forms. And seeing this, and he's seeing this all as what? He's seeing this whole creation in the body of the Lord of Lords. So this whole creation is viewed as the Ishwara Swarupa, as Virat. Virat means, in terms, if I were to anthropomorphize it, if I look at this, you know, this physical body is my physical body, right? And I call this the Vishwa. If I'm using for the Mandukya Upanishad, this physical body is the Vishwa. My mind and the subtle body, you know, is called Taijasa. It's just a name. So I can look at myself from the standpoint of this physical body in which the subtle body, Taijasa, abides, right? And then I can look at the causal body, you know, that we call the Prajna. The causal body, the subtle body, the physical body. But the whole jiva is in full expression with this physical body in which the Taijasa, the subtle body, is abiding, in which the causal body is abiding, whose self is the Atma. If I look at this whole Ishwara Swarupa, I say this physical body, which we call the waking state, is what we call Virat. The subtle body that pervades the whole physical body, the sattva running through the whole physical Virat, is what's called Hiranyagarbha. So that's what Hiranyagarbha is, what makes the physical upadi, conditioning agent, known. Just like this body without a subtle body is dead. It doesn't have a sukshma sharira. So if I look at the whole physical jagat, Virat, this Virat is pervaded by Hiranyagarbha, means the sattva and the rajas, you know, the sattva which reflects consciousness, so that the whole infinite creation itself is known. Right? Just like you, this physical body is known, the subtle body is known. So if you were to look at what Arjuna's, Pandava's seeing, he sees this entire creation as like the physical body, right, of God, of the Lord of all Lords, of the Lord of all of the Devatas, Deva Devasya Sharire. In this physical body of Bhagavan, of Krishna, you know, of Ishwara, Now he sees the entire creation as one entity in which all of these things, all of these individual things, are a part. He now no longer sees all of these things as their own story, but he sees them as part and parcel of Ishwara's story, of Ishwara's body. So it's like seeing, if you were to see this whole room, not as an inert room in which conscious beings are walking in. Like here's this inert room that we call room, and there's 10 of us sitting in it, you know, 10 little conscious beings sitting in this inert room. That's one vision. That's the vision of an Ajnani. That's the vision of a Jiva. But now, if the drishti changes, what you see is that this whole room is a conscious being, right? In which all of these things exist, all interconnected. So Arjuna was able to see the entire creation as Ishwara's form, as one entity, in which all of these individual things were part. So that's the vision, in fact, you know, that as you gain knowledge, that is the vision that you have. You don't get to see the whole Ishwara Swarupa, but everything that you do see is Ishwara. See, by infinite extension, or taking the infinite into the immediacy of your experience, because the infinite extension of Ishwara's total form includes every experience that exists within it. So now as a jiva, as an individual, you are part and parcel of Ishwara, and through your sense organs, you are experiencing Ishwara within Ishwara. But there's no experience that is not Ishwara, right? And so you start to experience all of this body, mind, sense organs, and everything that's perceived by them, plus everything that's going on in your mind. You know, all of your moods and all of your emotions, you know, all of your thoughts, all of your perceptions, you experience them as part and parcel of Ishwara. But Krishna is giving Arjuna, kind of taking him out of the jivatvam, being a jiva, looking at it through my eyes, and I can say, all of this is Ishwara. He's giving Arjuna the specialized, so Arjuna can see the whole creation as Ishwara sees it. See what I mean? Instead of through the, he says through his own eyes, but instead of through his own eyes, through those celestial eyes. And this is what he sees. So then he goes on and he says, verse 14, Tatasa Vismaya Vishtaha, Tatasa Vismaya Vishtaha, Hrishtaroma Tananjaya Pranamya Shirasa Devam, Pranamya Shirasa Devam, Kritanjali Rabhashata, Kritanjali Rabhashata. He says, then Dananjaya, another name for Arjuna, the one who is victorious in war, he's with his bow. So he says, then Arjuna became overwhelmed. He says, avishtaha, vismayavishtaha. It's another name for that ascharya, but overwhelmed with this sense of wonder and awe, vismayavishtaha. So Dhananjaya, now overwhelmed with this sense of awe and wonder. Hrishtaroma means one whose hair is standing on end. So he's become totally, totally overwhelmed with the vision that he's been given, and his hair is standing on end. Okay, Rishtaroma. Then what he does is that he says, Pranamya Shirasa Devam. He says, having done pranaming, bowing down with his head to the Lord, to the Deva, to that luminous one, he with this Kritanjali is, because he says, having bowed down with his head, with this Kritanjali, sometimes it's like this, but when you put that Krita before, it means like this. He bowed down like this, taking his hands together like this and putting them to his head. So having bowed down to the Lord like that, then Abhashata, then he said, he speaks. So up till now, up till this point, Sanjaya is just relating what Arjuna, he's describing what Arjuna is seeing. Right? To Dhritarashtra, he's describing what Arjuna has seen and what he's just has just done. And now Sanjaya is going to be telling Dhritarashtra, what Arjuna is saying. Okay? Because now Arjuna starts to speak. After having bowing down to Krishna, he starts to speak. So he goes like this. Arjuna uvacha, Arjuna uvacha, Pashami devans tava deva dehe, Pashami devans tava deva dehe, Sarvans tata bhuta vishesha sankhan, Sarvans tata bhuta vishesha sankhan, Brahmanamisham kamalasanastam, Brahmanamisham kamalasanastam, Rishinshta sarvan uragansta divyan, Rishinshta sarvan uragansta divyan. So Arjuna uvacha, Arjuna says, he says, Pashami devan tava deva dehe. He says, O Deva, O God, O Luminous One, I see the devas, I see all the devatas, Pashami devan dehe, in your body, tava dehe. I see all the devatas in your body, sarvan devan, I see all of them in your body. And I see Bhuta Vishesha Sangan, I see all of the Sangat, I see groups of all these Bhuta Visheshas, all of these different peculiar beings, all of different groups of individual beings, of the Bhuta Visheshas, all of the particular groups of Bhutas in the creation, I see all of them. First I see all of the Devatas, I see all of the Devas, and then I see all of the Bhuta Visheshas, I see all of the different Sangha means groups, I see all of the particular groups of different groups of beings is the idea. Bhuta Vishesha Sangan. And then he says, Brahmanam Isham, and I see the Lord Brahmaji. Brahmanam Isham. Isham means the Lord. Brahmanam is in the masculine, it means Brahmaji. Brahman is in the neuter. Brahmanam is from Brahma. So I see Brahmaji sitting there on his lotus. And I say, Kamalasanam. Seated on the Kamala, seated on the lotus. You can, some of these pictures that, you know, that you, we have of Brahmaji, he's going to be seated there on a lotus. So I see that vision of Brahmaji seated. Brahmaji is the creator, the one from whom the whole creation is coming. I see him there seated on the lotus. And I see all of the rishis. He says, Rishin Saravan. I see all of the rishis, all of, and Uragan, and I see all of the divine snakes, Uragas. There are some snakes that are in the whole Mahabharata and Ramayana that are divine. So he says, and I see all of the divine snakes, all the ones that they talk about in the Mahabharata and the Ramayana. There they all are. I see them. I see all of the rishis that have ever been talked about. I see Brahmaji. I see all of the devatas, everything that has been told to me. Swamiji comments on this like this, that all of the things that have been in the culture, all of the stories that all of the children are brought up with, that Arjuna is brought up with, you know, all of those characters, I see them all in this Vishwasarupa. Everyone that has ever been taught to me, everyone that I've ever known or ever heard about, all of those are there. And so, so I see all of those. And then he goes, let's do the next one. Aneka bahudara vakranetram, Aneka bahudara vakranetram, Pashami tva sarvatonantarupam, Pashami tva sarvatonantarupam, Nantam namadyam napunarastavadim, Nantam namadyam napunastavadim, Pashami vishwami vishweshwara vishwarupa, Pashami Vishweshwara Vishwarupa. He says, Aneka Bahu Udara Vaktranetram Pashami. Pashami Twa. I see you with many arms and stomachs and mouths and eyes. I see you, you who have many arms and stomachs and mouths and eyes. I see you everywhere with Anantarupam, a form that is endless. So, Sarvataha, in all directions, from every, in all directions, I see you who have a form which is limitless. Then he says, Naantam, a form which Naantam, there is no end. Namadyam, there is no middle, nor again is there any beginning. There's no end, there's no start to it, there's no middle place, because there's nowhere to find the middle in something infinite. Just think about it. If something is endless and infinite, there is no middle, right? Because there's no end. So the middle doesn't even exist. And there's no beginning. There's no first place of its becoming. You can take it like this too. There's no beginning, there's no end, there's no middle. And also in terms of spatially, there's no end and there's no middle. So, na antam, na madhyam, nor again, tava adi, nor is there any beginning for you. So, I see, I can't see an end or a beginning or a middle. He says, O Vishweshwara, Vishwa Ishwara, the one who is the Lord of the whole creation. But then he says, Vishwarupa, the one who is the entire creation. The one who is the Lord of the entire creation. And so he says, hey, Vishweshwara, the one who is the Lord of the entire creation, means I am the conscious being of this entire creation, the Lord of the creation, but the one whose form is the entire creation. And we say that Ishwara, or Brahman, is both the Nimitta and Upadana Karanam. The Upadana Karana means the material cause. Means this whole creation is my body. It's not that I am here and the creation is over there. That this whole creation is my form. And the whole creation comes from me, is sustained by me, and resolves into me. When I say that, the whole creation comes from me, is sustained by me, and resolves into me, then I say, for the Lord Vishweshwara, I am the Lord of the entire creation. Krishna, the Lord, Ishwara is the Lord of the entire creation. The one from whom the whole creation comes, is sustained and resolves. But then, there is no other creation other than me. So this entire form is me. Form comes from me, is sustained by me, resolves into me, and that form, and I am that form. It would be like if you say, exactly really, in a sense, if you say, if you imagine a meadow, you know, if you imagine a meadow with many trees and animals and people in it and forest, etc., you say, that imagination comes from me, sustained by me, resolves into me. I am the Lord of the meadow, right? Because I'm the conscious being from which it has come, who sustains it and into which it is resolved. So I am the Ishwara. I'm the Ishwara of the meadow, my meadow imagination. But then you have to also be able to say, and that meadow imagination is me. It has no being, means it has no being apart from me. It has no reality apart from me. I am its very self. And so here, this is the big for Arjuna actually to say this, to use these two words, Vishweshwara and Vishwarupa, because those two words hold the entire satyam mitya. It holds the entire truth of everything. I am the Nimitta Karana, I am the conscious being because of which this comes. You know, I am the wielder of the Maya, I am the Mayavi, and the one who is the conscious wielder of the Maya. And at the same time, that Maya has no being apart from me, so I am the very being of the Maya also. So that's called Nimitta. That's why we say Ishwara is the Nimitta Upadana Karana. Nimitta means the efficient cause. Upadana Karana means the material cause. Another, just a word about this. If I say, we use the example of a pot maker. The pot maker is the Nimitta Karana, the efficient cause of the pot. But the pot maker is not the material cause of the pot. The clay is the material cause of the pot. So the Nimitta Karana in the world, we know the Nimitta Karana is different from the Upadana Karana. The efficient cause is different than the material cause. But here, this entire universe has no being separate from the Nimitta Karana. The efficient cause is the material cause. So an example they use for that is the example of a dancer. A dancer is both the body of the dance, the dance, the creation, is not apart from the dancer. Right? They also use the example in the Mundaka Upanishad of a spider in its web, just trying to show, you know, that the conscious being is the one from whom the creation comes. That there's not a, those drishtantas have their limitations, but still, to try to understand that the whole creation is not apart from the creator, but is the very being of the creator itself. So I'm going to do upadana karma. Okay, so I'm going to do one more. Kiritinam gadinam chakrinam. Kiritinam gadinam chakrinam cha. Kiritinam gadinam chakrinam cha. Kiritinam gadinam chakrinam cha. Tejo ramshi sarvato dittimantam. Tejo rashim sarvato dittimantam. Pashami tvam durnirikshan samantat. Pashami tvam durnirikshan samantat. Dittana larka jitama prameyam. Dittana larka jitama prameyam. Kiritinam means, so now Arjuna is seeing again, after seeing the whole Swarupa, Vishwasarupa, then he sees Krishna again. He sees Krishna as the one who is wearing a crown, who has a mace in one hand and a chakra in the other. And then he sees this Krishna Swarupa, you know, crowned with a mace in one hand and the chakra in the other. Tejo Rashi as just absolute luminosity, shining light. And he says, Sarvato Deeptimantam, shining and blazing from every, Deeptimantam means blazing from every side. Like, Tejo Rashi means like a ball of Tejas, blazing from every side. So he says, Pashami Tvam, I see you. I see you with this crown and your mace and your chakra blazing from every side. Durniriksham, extremely difficult to look at because of the luminosity. Durniriksham, very difficult for me to hold. And then he says, Samantat, Dita Anala Arkadyutam. He says, from all around, you are like the light of the blazing fire and sun. He says, Anala is the fire, Arka is the sun. Deepa is that shining luminosity of the Deepa Anala Arka, of the blazing fire and sun, that brilliance, right? I'm seeing you who have this brilliance and who are aprameyam. Aprameyam means, normally when we use the word aprameyam, it means that which cannot be known. As it, like we use it for the Atma. The Atma is aprameyam. It can't be objectified. But here aprameyam means it's too vast. It's limitless. There's no possibility of being able to see the whole thing because there's no end to it. I can't see, like we're used to focusing on one thing or another thing or another thing, but this is an infinite swarupa, so it's aprameyam, it's too much to take in at once, he says. Mm-hmm. OK. Okay, let's stop here. Next. This goes on for another 30 verses. So. But in the next one, there's we can stop the next one for a little while and do an unfoldment in the next week, but I'll wait till next week to do that.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's take a break. Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.
Do we take this literally, or is this a poetic rendition of the author, or is it this kind of sight found in the Upanishads?
You know, it is poetic, but it's poetic and not poetic, because you can, in a way, though you can't hold the whole creation in your mind with this divya chakshu, you can by studying these verses and getting the image of the verses, you can go around in the creation and do the same thing. You know, where you see with a sense of wonder everything that you experience as Ishvara. You know? And when you experience, like say for instance with the devatas, if you think of the whole order of the creation as an expression of Ishvara. When Swamiji uses order, he means all of the laws in the creation, infinite number of laws in the creation. So each one is a devata. And so when you see it as a devata, what are you really seeing is that the creation is a conscious being. Right? Like what if I look at my ability to grasp? Well, that's a devata. You know, the one who's, in the sense that, what is it that allows, what are the laws that allow for grasping? You know, or for speaking, or for seeing. All of these things have devatas. All of these capacities have devatas. And so it's just a way of looking at the creation as a conscious entity. And then, with this, they're painting vast pictures so that as you chant it, say, like, this is a favorite chapter of many bhaktas in India, so they will chant it. You know, and even if they don't have knowledge, they're just, it's a praise of Ishvara's glory. And so they'll chant it, and as they know what they're chanting, they'll visualize what's being said. You know, so say if you understand the Sanskrit or you learn it in English, you'll be visualizing what's being said. And it gives you an overwhelming sense of Ishvara.
So, we can sit here.
It's okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, bye-bye.
So we can sit here and have that same sense of Ishvara, the same awe and wonder. I mean, if you're not having that as an experience, is there, you're not seeing Ishvara, or
no, not like that.
Mm-hmm.
It just depends on your appreciating it. That's all. It's not real like that, Edward. Take it as poetic.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's poetic of something real.
Yeah.
Right? That's probably the best way to take it.
No, this, some of these verses are very similar to a Rudram, isn't it? I mean, a thousand cores of sun rising at the city time.
That's right.
So
they kind of come from the same culture, the same Vedas, you know? The same, they use a lot of the same drishtantas, same illustrations.
Yeah, so really, this is why it's so important to understand that, like Paul, like all the Devadas, all the Rudras, huh? All directions, system.
Yeah, wherever you look, you see Ishwara. Yeah. That's what this is. Mm-hmm. Wherever you look, you see Ishwara.
But I think that what I'm starting to get a taste of is like it's called Krishna, it's called Shiva, but it's all Ishwara.
It's all Ishwara. It's you're evoking.
It's all the formless. It's all.
It's all Brahman in the end, but whether you're evoking Ishwara as Shiva or as Rudra, you know, or as Krishna, it doesn't matter. You're just
or
Brahmaji or whatever. You're evoking all of the different forms of Ishwara or aspects of Ishwara. Like, you know when they say like the 1001 names of Vishnu, which Vishnu Sahasranama? Mm-hmm. It's like looking at, say if you look at a person, and a person, a human being, they have many, many different qualities. You know, like the one who rages when provoked, or the one who is kind to all beings. Same person, you know, the one who dishes out the papa, you know, the one who punishes with papa karmas, the one who rewards with the punya karmas. These are all bahuvri compounds, they're all names. So you could think of, say you know somebody very well, you could name them, and you could look at them as from their rudra. You could see the rudra in them. You could see the Shiva in them. You could see the Krishna in them. The Hari in them, you know? Because those are all there. So that's why if you say Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, you know, you can look at Ishwara as Shiva. It's a perfect name for Ishwara because some of the time, or as Rudra, you can look at the, you can call Ishwara Rudra. Because Rudra makes people cry. Ishwara makes people cry, you know. And he also, you know, dries their tears. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, but I don't see Krishna being mentioned as somebody that makes somebody cry.
No.
Not as a person, but as Ishwara.
Yeah, no, that's what I mean. Sometimes you make somebody cry. Say if you're the whole. I can evoke this part of you. Or the one who destroys all ignorance, that's Shiva, you know? Or the one who gives Ananda, Rama, you know, or Krishna. I can evoke Ishwara in so many sides to Ishwara.
Can you talk about the iconography a little bit about the thousand eyes and thousand mouths? And I oftentimes see depictions of gods having many heads. Is it the same sort of thing where there's the one totality and out of that comes differentiation, but it's still tied to that totality?
That's the idea, yeah. And when you say thousand means limitless, countless. Mm-hmm. When you say hundreds or thousands, that means countless, not that there's literally a thousand. But the one who has countless eyes, countless mouths. Like in the Purusha Suktam, one prayer to Ishwara as the one who has countless eyes, countless mouths, countless hands, countless legs, limitless legs. And because all legs are his legs, right? All eyes are his eyes, like that. And so if it's all part of one infinite conscious being, then that infinite conscious being has infinite eyes and infinite hands and infinite ears and, you know, infinite mouths, infinite stomachs. For eating, infinite bahu. Bahu means arms and strength. So it's just images for seeing everything as Ishwara and nothing away from Ishwara.
So this oneness, the totality,
is it useful to think of that as like a one dynamic process that everything is part of, and the conscious mind can make distinctions, can see things separately, or is it like
you can see all of these things that are separate all be interrelated,
but
interconnected.
Is it kind of like there's a river and then there's a little eddy that makes a distinction from the river, but it's still part of the river, that sort of thing, and then it dissolves back into the river?
I would say, now if we're just talking about the manifestation of names and forms, that every name and form that you see is part of that manifestation. Like if you were, just in a very simple, if you were to have a dream, that dream is one manifestation, it's one whole. But in that whole are all of these things that are being experienced. Right? But it's all of one material. That's what we call Maya. But the self of that one material is just pure consciousness. Right? So there's two material causes. One is the actual being that is there, and that's pure consciousness. And then the other is that Maya, which is responsible for the projection of all of these multifarious colors and names and forms. So you see all of these names and forms, and they all have one being, one substance. But the names and forms are many. That's not going to make sense to you unless I really unfold it. It's just a bunch of words.
Well, I don't see how there's the two material causes I can...
Well, no, like this. Like if I say a clay pot, okay, the truth there is the clay, so that I can say there's only clay. But there's something that allows for this form pot, okay? That doesn't have any real being. It's what we call mithya. It has no real being at all. But still, it's there experienced. So what is responsible for the experience of names and forms when they have no real being? That's what we call maya. So we say that's the parinama upadana karana. It's the material cause responsible for the projection of all of these names and forms. But it's all mithya. It means it has no reality apart from what is real, which is the upadana, which we call vivarta upadana karana. That's the material cause that doesn't go through any type of change to become this creation. So it's technical. You know, I have to kind of explain it from scratch. So I have to explain it from here and build up, and I'm just talking to you from here, so it's difficult. Yeah. I have to do an unfoldment. But these verses are not very unfolding in their nature.
Yeah,
these verses are just images.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
What this chapter is, so... I'm doing it because I want to go through the whole Gita.
Hmm.
But that means we have to...
And did we do 9 verses?
8.
Okay. That verse.
Yeah.
I did 8. It's a little hard to go through, but, you know, because it's not exactly what we're used to. But, you know, but you can study what Swamiji wrote on it and read them through and do a little contemplation over it. That's what I do, actually. I'm actually read it several times just to try to visualize it in my mind. Yeah.
Why do you think Shankara went in such detail with it? I mean, so many verses of it.
Not Shankara, it's Krishna. It's the Bhagavad Gita.
Oh.
Shankara did the little, he actually just did a very minute commentary on each one. So the question is, well, the Mahabharata, the Bhagavad Gita is right in the middle of the Mahabharata. Right? Mahabharata is like 18 volumes long. It's huge, right? And so it's extremely detailed. Like sometimes when you're reading sections of it, they'll be just describing the landscape, or sometimes they'll be describing a palace. You know, that the Pandavas have entered a palace. And it'll go on for pages. Very detailed and ornate descriptions. You know?
Like a movie.
Yeah. as though you're actually seeing it. And so here, while we're teaching it, it's kind of a slow process, like we only did 10 verses. But say if I was just a poet, and I was speaking in a language that you knew, you know, and I was just kind of painting the picture, verse after verse after verse, painting the picture, you know, of that Ishvara Swarupa. It's not about really unfolding it, it's just that the picture is being painted. Mm-hmm. And it's being painted for 40 verses, you know. But when we're doing it, we're translating the Sanskrit and talking about it a little bit, and it goes on for quite a while. You know? And some of the verses, like the ones that are coming up, are ones that we can sit on for a while because there's some unfoldment involved in those verses. But a lot of these that we did tonight, for me it's not really a matter except here or there, there's something to say about it. But it's really just kind of telling the verse and giving a little bit of context.
For yeah, it. Well, there's not much more you can say when you talk about Brahmaji sitting on the lotus. I mean.
Well, there is. I could tell the whole story of Brahmaji or something. But...
But also this idea of appreciating the creation as Ishvara. Usually you think of your life as your own story. Mm-hmm. This is the story. You don't think of it as...
You don't see everything as part of Ishvara's story. Yeah. You know? Where you look around and you see this is all nothing but Ishvara.
But but my life it's an individual story.
And, right.
Yeah. And to crack through that, if you see it as his story rather than the individual's story.
You see your story as part and parcel of a much bigger story. That your story is contained within a much bigger story. You know, it's not alone. You're not alone in the story.
Yeah.
And infinitely, right, brother?
Mm-hmm. And the story has many players and many parts. You know, and you're not the center of it.
That's the weird part.
You're the center of it in the sense that yourself is the self of Ishvara. And that way you are the center of the whole thing. Mm-hmm. But this jiva is not the center. Mm-hmm. Even the prarabdha, your prarabdha karma, the karmas that cause you to take this body is part of the prarabdha karma. Right? It's not just isolated the nature of your body as you grow old. It's the body located in the situation that you find yourself in. Mm-hmm. It's the prarabdha karma. You know? That's why when you say, this is my karma, you're not just talking about your body, you're talking about the situation. Mm-hmm. Right? So the situation is containing you.
So it seems like there's like two karmas going on at the same time. I mean, you can't...
Well, I would say that the karma is complex and it includes your body. Mm. So you could even say there's one, in a way, there's a many, many karmas going on at the same time. And you're part of it. Because, see, all of us are here in this room, so our karmas are intersecting. Mm. We're all sharing a karma right here. This is what prarabdha karma that is. We're all involved in at this moment.
Yeah. Rather, it's infinite though, right? Because like, if I have any anxiety about having a Brahmanisha in this lifetime or a moksha, I can come back next lifetime because it's infinite play anyway.
It's infinite play anyway, but moksha, you know, it has to do with recognizing yourself, which is not infinite in terms of spatially or number of things. Yourself is just one being. So it's a matter of knowing that. And the relationship of that one being to this creation is satya mitya. You know, and so that's what needs to be recognized. And then you can walk around, because you have sense organs and a body, you can walk around experiencing Ishvara. And walking around experiencing Ishvara includes the experience of the body and the mind and the sense organs and the moods and the emotions and the perceptions. The entirety of your experience is Ishvara. You know? And that's why in the end you'll say, I'm not a karta or bhokta. I'm not a doer. I'm not an enjoyer. That's all belong. All of that duality belongs to Ishvara. I'm Brahman. I'm not really doing anything. You know, and so then you appreciate the whole, the absolute whole thing, both subject and object, as Ishvara. You know, that's what we call sarvakarma sannyasa. That really the sannyasi is not just the one wearing orange. It starts out that way. You have two lifestyles, either karma yoga, this is the Gita, karma yoga, or sannyasa. But both the karma yogi and the sannyasi are seekers for what they're seeking, moksha, liberation. And that liberation is sarvakarma sannyasa, where I recognize that I am free of all karma, even breathing. And seeing and talking to my digestive system. That's all karma. That's all activity. Krit means to do or to make. Karma means activity, action. Sarva karma sannyasa means the one who is free of all action. There's only one thing free of all action, is Brahman. So if you can say, I am Brahman, then I know I am Brahman, then I am a sarva karma sannyasi, whether I'm wearing orange or I'm a karma yogi or what. But they talk about karma yoga and sannyasa in the sense of taking the orange or living in the world with that karma yoga buddhi. You know, they talk about that as what is most conducive to you gaining knowledge. What lifestyle is most conducive to you gaining knowledge? Should you take orange, you know, and just go away up into the Himalayas and live a quiet, studious life? Or should you studying Vedanta, the Upanishads, or should you stay in the world, you know, living your life, studying, you know, doing Shravana, Manana, Nididhyasana, studying to gain this knowledge? So Arjuna is always asking, Krishna, what should I do? I want to take the sannyasa. Just, let me just leave all of this and go to the hills, go to the mountains and just study this. That's what I want to do. And our Krishna could say, no, this is better. This is better because if you stay in your life, then this becomes a field for in which to work out all of your raga dvesha, all of your likes and dislikes. You know, otherwise what you'll do is prematurely run to the mountains and take the sannyasa vows. And then your whole lifestyle is very limited. Then you have to, because you're wearing orange, so everybody knows you're a sannyasi. You know, and so then you have to live the life of a sannyasi, which is basically to contemplate, to teach, and to study. That's your realm as a sannyasi. Contemplate, teach, study. You know. But then you have all of these other things you want to do. And so then you can, or need to do, or different ways of expressing yourself. So then that doesn't allow all of that. So it'll be frustrated. So the best way is to study, do the same study, but be in the world where you can do what you need to do, yeah, and let your mind mature naturally. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Otherwise, you'll be sitting in your little ashram.
Irritated
and worried about all the things that you're not.
Swatting mosquitoes, being adharmic.
So that's the whole Gita is really based on this understanding.
I don't quite understand why it's so important to not be doing action or understanding that.
It's not important. It has to do, though, with. It's really not about the action that you do, which is another point of clarification that the Gita is talking about. It's not the action that you do, it's the attitude with which you do it. You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, karma yoga. Yeah, and you have to be feel free in the life that you're living. What happens is we don't feel free in the life that we're living because we want to be this way or that way. You know, and so then that if I want something to be a particular way and I don't get and it's not like it, then I can get irritated and upset. You know, or I want somebody to behave in a certain way and they don't behave in that way, then I get irritated and angry and upset.
Sorry. Yeah. Sounds like me.
A little moment there.
Enlightened moment.
Yeah, so that means the we have work to do then. You know? Because I can want something to be different and make action to make it different, but then I can also be fine if I don't get my way. That's freedom, you know. It's not like we have to walk around like zombies and not have any opinion about anything. You can work to improve things, but you don't have to get upset when it doesn't happen exactly how you want, because the world isn't centered around you, so you're not always going to get your way, you know.
Well, how fine are you when you don't get your way? I mean, that's different than getting your way.
You can be completely fine without getting your way and have the freedom to work to get your way. That's realistic, you know, really. But the only way you can do that is if you know where the source of happiness really is. If you know the source of happiness is your own being, then the mind learns more and more just to stay home. And staying home, then you do what you need to do. And you can have preferences and all of that, but it doesn't really matter because you're not projecting your ananda, your fullness on all of these objects, you know. And then running after them so it really matters. You know, it doesn't really matter. Once you really know that, then you can be involved. You're free to be involved with your life and to be a gracious person. You know, because for the world over, you are involved with your life, but Bhagavan hasn't made the creation in such a way that all of your desires will be fulfilled. It just really is not like that. For everybody. Some things will go smoothly for you and other things will not go smoothly. And what if your position is, well, I'll only be happy when I'm getting my way and I'll be really miserable when I'm not. You know, we're all in some variation of that. Going from happiness to misery based upon if things are going according to my preferences. And so I spend a lot of time on a roller coaster ride because of that.
So yeah. when you know better than that, and then you know the source of well-being,
then your mind doesn't want to bother.
But the roller coaster, can still go on.
The roller coaster, external roller coaster, can go on, but you don't have to be an internal roller coaster.
You're not on it, you just watch it.
It's a free ride. It's a free ride.
Yeah.
No, it's it's not, it's, you can be free of asking the creation to be what it actually isn't. You know, you stop asking it to be what it isn't. And the only real reason you can do that is because you've already discovered that source of ananda, of fullness and happiness, isn't dependent upon the creation being this way or that way. And so the more, as your mind gets more at home with that fact, the less it even wants to demand Bhagavan to be in a particular way, because it just is disruptive to my own shanti. I don't even want to ask for it to be one way or another. I'd rather just, this is the way it is. You know? And you can say, okay, this is the way it is. Oh, that's fine. And I'd rather just be with it the way it is rather than be at stake, have it have to be a particular way. Because then I can just enjoy my own ananda. It's not about being lazy either, at all. It's about being engaged with what is. and being interested in the way Bhagawan is, rather than in the way you want Bhagawan to be. You know?
Isn't there still some... There's still choices to how to perceive, and
yeah.
some kind of intention is going to inform
Absolutely.
You.
That's right. That's why you can have your intention. I would say like this. If you look at the desire template, what I call desire template, for most people it's, I want this so that I can be happy. That's the problem. I can happily want this and go for it. But if I don't get it, that doesn't mean that I have to become distraught. Mm-hmm. So I have the freedom to really engage fully in my life, but also accept the fruits of my actions as prasad from Bhagawan. That's karma yoga, actually. So you're free to totally engage, you know, and to have passion for something. But when you don't get the results that you were working for, then you accept that as prasad from Bhagawan, from the Lord. You know? Otherwise you have to say that you really are responsible for the results of your action in this sense that you see, if you were really responsible for the results of your action, then you would always get the results of your action. But there are just too many variables that have nothing to do with you. Some of it will have to do with you, but much of it has nothing to do with you. You know? So there's just many other factors in any given situation, you know, that produce the results of any action, and you're only one player in that result. See what I mean?
And that also applies to moksha.
It applies to... It applies to moksha in a sense, like...
What was the question? I didn't get it.
This, that there's many variables involved in gaining moksha. We'd say like this. There are many variables involved in getting yourself to class, you know, or getting yourself in a situation where you can study. That's why when we chant these shantipads like Sahanavavatu, there's several of them. They're always asking Bhagawan to create a conducive situation. So say the conducive situation is there, and there can be a lot of obstructions to that, you know. But the conducive situation is there, and your mind is available. That's another thing. You could get to that teaching, and everything's fine, except there's something going on at home that's very concerning. And so even though you're here, you can't listen. You know? Here means in that teacher-student relationship where that teaching is actually taking place and being unfolded in a particular way. But once you're there in that situation, then we're not talking about karma, we're talking about knowledge. Getting yourself to the situation is karma. But when knowledge is taking place, then all you have to do really is have your sense organs and your mind available and the teaching available, and then knowledge takes place because yourself is already present. So that's a good question, and it requires a lot of unfoldment, but basically knowledge is not a karma, but getting yourself into position is. And so there can be obstructions there.